Quorum. Members, we're going to get started here. We don't have a quorum yet, but out of respect for the testifiers' time, we at least want to get ourselves started. First off, we have got the minutes from April 7th of 2011. Is anybody willing to move those minutes?
So moved, Madam Chair.
Representative Loon moves the April 7th, 2011. Well, you know what? We can't vote on these yet. Oh, tricksies. We can move them. All right, well, they're moved, so we keep note of that. I think what we'll start with, we have Mr. Todd Klingel from the Minneapolis Regional Chamber of Commerce. Mr. Klingel, if you want to come to the testifier table, and please state your name for the record, and we have... And you know what? We now have quorum. So before we start, right? One, two, three. Yep, we do. Representative Loon renews her motion to approve the April 7th, 2011 minutes. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? All right, we have approved the minutes for April 7th, 2011. And we're going to start the hearing started. And Mr. Klingel, why don't you get us started here?
Good morning. I am Todd Klingel. I'm the president of the Minneapolis Regional Chamber of Commerce. We've come up as a tag team because the four chambers presenting today, it's kind of a funnel. Bill represents the Minnesota Chamber, and then I'm the region, and then the other two are specific areas within the region. So with your permission, we thought we might start from the statewide perspective.
Mr. Blazer.
Chair Anderson, members of the committee, my name is Bill Blazer. I'm responsible for public affairs and economic development at the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. This is a difficult assignment, and I hope my comments will be relevant to the task that you have at hand. Let me start out with a little bit of background on quickly on the chamber and then the economic development work that we do as kind of a context for my observations here. State Chamber has about 2,400 member businesses. What's interesting about our membership is that it's almost evenly divided between the Twin Cities and Greater Minnesota. We're also pretty reflective of the state's economy. If you divided our members up by industry, they'd pretty much look like the state's economy. And also, like the state's economy, most of our members are relatively small. 80% of them have fewer than 100 employees, and of that 80%, the vast majority of them have fewer than 50 employees. So we represent a lot of small companies, but that's pretty much the essence of Minnesota's economy. Relevant to this discussion is a program that we began 8 years ago called Grow Minnesota. It is the Minnesota Chamber's business retention and economic development program, which we operate in partnership with 56 local chambers of commerce and regional economic development organizations around the state, including the three chambers that you have represented here today. The great thing about Grow Minnesota is that in the course of a year, the Minnesota Chamber with those partners visits on a one-on-one basis with just over 800 Minnesota companies. And the major reason that we go to see them is to thank them for having a business in Minnesota and employing people in, I'm sure, all of your districts. But we also ask them about their company, how it's changing, what their plans are in the future, what we could do to help them be more successful in Minnesota. In the course of a year, we work with almost 150 companies on individual company-specific problems, if you will. So we learn a lot about the companies. We learn about what they're planning to do, what they're thinking about our state, and those kinds of things. So when I think about the question before you, that is the issue of reapportionment and how you would consider setting up districts, and I reflect on what I'm hearing from companies about what they see as their community, and the most striking thing that I can say is that we see about over 800 companies. I think each of them has a slightly different definition of what their community is. They are divided into three parts: where their employees come from, where they get their supplies or their inputs for their company, and then third, where their customers are located. So if you start with the first, for example, employees, what we've noticed is that that more and more companies have employees coming from longer and longer distances. And in some cases, for example, I visited with a business in the West Metro, a manufacturing company, about 125 employees. A significant number of his employees drive in excess of 50 miles to get to the business. It's got a large number of employees, believe it or not, from the Mankato area. So this employer, for example, has changed his work week so that people work fewer days but longer days, which means they make that commute less often between the West Metro and Mankato. Other companies, visited with a large retail company located in the metro area that's thinking about its expansions elsewhere in the U.S. That company is looking, it's got a suburban location, but it's thinking about locations in the Twin Cities, in the two central cities, as a means of adding diversity to its workforce. This company sees itself expanding, for example, in the southeast U.S. and in the southwest, and it places a high value on workers who can speak Spanish, for example. So they're thinking about, you know, are we located in the right place, given where our business is growing and how it's changing. So I hate to say this, but it's true. Every company, if you look at their employees, there's a different theory. And very seldom do I go to a company, except in some greater Minnesota communities, but I'm not sure that's the case, where you have people who are, where there's a clear pattern about where the employees are coming from. So there's a lot of changing in terms of where the business is located relative to the workers are. Okay, secondly, let's talk about suppliers. Same sort of thing. If you took the clock back 50 years or maybe even 40 years, you would see suppliers clustered closer to the company. That is the case with less and less frequency, at least the companies that we see. These businesses are very sensitive to the cost of doing business, so when they're buying, whether it's paper clips or steel or any input, they're very price sensitive, and on that basis, inputs, instead of, they're not they're going to shop for the best deal. If they get the best deal from a supplier a mile from the plant or the office, that's where they'll go. If they get the best deal from a supplier who's located in, you know, Chicago, they'll go there. So almost like the employees, there's a lot of change. So you can't say that just because a business is located, you know, in Burnsville, that's its community, whether it's with respect to employees or with respect to suppliers. And finally, customers, in some respects, we got the same thing going on, but there's a real pattern among at least the companies that we visit to identify customers outside of Minnesota. And outside meaning nationally or in the international marketplace. And what's fascinating to us is we even see this among retailers. I've visited with small retailers in greater Minnesota who have created websites, and the specific purpose of the website is to have a way of basically selling goods that they had marked down in the store in their community on a sale basis to reach a broader customer base. So even a relatively small retailers are reaching outside of their community. So when we talk to companies about where they will expand and where they might grow their business, if we focus the discussion on locations within Minnesota, which we always try to do because we want them to grow in Minnesota, we find with increasing frequency that they're trying to think about a location where they can meet their workforce requirements. And believe it or not, sometimes that means moving a facility to attract the workers that they need. But in just as many cases, it means changing the way the business operates so that they can work with a more dispersed workforce. We have a growing number of Minnesota companies that, for example, that have people working at home or working in satellite offices that are relatively small or satellite shops that are relatively small that feed product or results into a larger facility. So the employers that we talk about are working really hard to accommodate, to create a workplace that accommodates the workers that are available. In our Grow Minnesota visits, one of the things that we've noticed, observed over the 8 years that we've been doing these visits, is that whether the economy is going strong as it was, say, between 2004 and 2006, or in the depths of a recession as it was from 2008, 2009, and recovering from right now, is that Minnesota companies struggle to fill certain positions. And I think what that's done is made them more flexible, more willing to think about alternative strategies. Maybe it's having people work remotely, or maybe it's when we think about where we're going to put the manufacturing facility, going to a community where we're confident we can find the workers. And the key point, and the one that I want to leave you with, is that this whole notion of a business, of a business's community, kind of where its workers are, where its suppliers come from, and where its customers are, is in a great state of flux. And the old model, where everybody was relatively close, especially if it was a manufacturing facility, is gone and not coming back. I wish I could sit here and tell you exactly what those patterns are going to look like, but I think it still remains to be seen. I think this trend toward, in effect, the decentralization of the workplace and the changes that employers are going to make to accommodate an aging population is very much kind of a work in progress. And I can't say with certainty kind of how it's going to end up. With that, I'm happy to answer questions and hopefully be helpful.
Well, thank you, Mr. Blazar. And I don't know if this question is for you or if it would be more appropriate for Mr. Klingel. But, you know, because of what you've just kind of outlined for us, I'm assuming then that, you know, Minneapolis and St. Paul aren't the separate entities that maybe they were in the past. It sounds like there's some inner exchange between the two communities and that they've kind of melded to some degree. Is that your assessment, Mr. Klingel?
Yes, Chair Anderson, committee members, indeed that is the case. When we do our Grow Minnesota calls in conjunction with Minnesota Chamber, and we say, now, thinking of your community, what do you feel about these things, they will think of the metropolitan area. And frankly, in our case, it is the MSA, or for 11 counties that are here in Minnesota, not the two in Wisconsin. So the work that we do and that our board is after is how do we improve this region as a whole, and the discussions we have reflect that. When we're talking to the individual businesses. The reason I was hoping that Bill would go first and glad that he did is he really does set the stage, and then you can see how that plays in the smaller realm. For example, City of Minneapolis has 160,000 people who work in the downtown area. Downtown only has 30,000 residents, and many of them are retired. So the majority of the workers in downtown come from across the metro area, and I think there are now 22 counties sending at least 5% of their workforce into the metro area for work. So it is indeed an increasingly independent group of workers that don't mind these longer ways of getting to and from work. But we have seen, as Bill mentioned, office space changing. The amount of office space for employees gone down because there are now shared employees and there's the telecommute and other ways that people are working. And I too was vexed in trying to draw the connection between where someone lives and where the jobs are.
Mr. Klingel, kind of to that point, what is the vacancy rate, the foreclosure rate for a commercial industrial property? Do you have any of those statistics at all, or guesstimates?
I do not. Maybe some of the, well, no, maybe yes, maybe I don't.
Mr. Blazar?
It depends on whether you're thinking about offices or an industrial property, and it does vary quite a, you know, the the commercial realtors could give you those statistics by quadrant for the metro area. My recollection is the good news it's going down, but it still remains relatively high. We still have anybody who thinks that we've kind of fully recovered from this recession really is, I think, just hasn't spent much time driving around the metro area. We've got a lot of office space to mm-hmm. absorb. Manufacturing is getting better, but it's still difficult. And the so there's still a lot of recovery yet to be had here. But I don't know that those buildings are in place, so that maybe they get occupied, so that doesn't necessarily change the pattern of where business gets done. I would think logically that those buildings would fill up before anybody's going to build a lot of new space, at least in the Twin Cities region. It's a little different in greater Minnesota.
Well, and let me reinforce that. You might have seen plans for an office tower a few weeks ago in the paper. That is a distant plan for an office tower, and I think, frankly, some wishful thinking. Nice to even be talking about it, but it will be some time before the shadow space and the space downtown is consumed enough to justify a new building like
Great.
That.
Wonderful. Representative Murphy.
Mr. Blazer, just on that point, the building are still there and they get occupied. Who occupies it?
Mr. Blazer.
Yeah. Madam Chair, Representative Murphy, if it's an office building, it's likely to be an expansion of an existing company. I'm working with a business right now. Actually, I'll give you two examples. Got a business in the western suburbs that is trying to figure out whether or not it keeps its headquarters operation in Minnesota. And one of the arguments that's been persuasive is that within a block or two of where the company is currently located, there are two or three other office buildings which have vacant space. And so this company, while it doesn't need that space today, it's able to take an option on that space, so that looking ahead 3 to 5 years, and in this particular instance, the fact that there's vacant office space actually has helped us keep that headquarters here. So a second example one that we're working on in northeastern Minnesota is a facility that was used for processing various kinds of medical records and healthcare claims. We're hoping to find a business that does something like that. And the good news is that there are companies in the Twin Cities that are doing that kind of work and that are growing, and they would be a really logical fit for this particular building. There's a similar vacant building west of the Twin Cities in a relatively small community. So they're set up for that particular function, and our hope is to find companies that are in that line of work to go to those communities, because since the facility is there, it's equipped. There are actually also workers who were working there before the previous tenants moved out, so it becomes an attractive proposition for a Twin Cities company.
Mr. Klingel, to that point.
Well, I wanted to your point earlier, Chair Anderson, the idea of the regionalization of the marketplace. About 6 years ago, we created something called MetroMSP.org, which is a website strictly for economic development, but it was the first that encompassed all 11 counties. And those counties contributed, the business community contributed, and it is now thought to be one of the best sites of its kind for a metro area in the country. That is now blossoming into a whole regional economic development partnership that you may have heard of that has just been launched. Michael Langley is its executive director, and that is just, again, I think, more proof of the efforts being made to market ourselves as a region so that we can compete against regions around the country and around the world. So the Minneapolis-St. Paul lines have certainly blurred, as they have with the suburbs.
Mr. Blazer.
Madam Chair, we focus maybe too much here on the Twin Cities. I know...
Focus too much on the Twin Cities.
Before we do that, Mr. Blazer, though, I just want to make sure Representative Murphy, did that answer all your questions?
It did.
Okay. Mr. Blazer.
I was just going to say that when I travel around the state and go to many of our kind of regional cities, I see the same pattern, that is that the business can be in an outlying community and the workers might be located, might be living, maybe in, they might be working in Atwater but living in Wilmer or even further.
Have you done your homework, Mr. Blazer?
What's that?
Have you done your homework, Mr.
No,
Blazer?
No, I'm just telling that there are a lot of people moving around to get to work, and the patterns aren't. There's just as much of that movement in Greater Minnesota as there is in the Twin Cities, and I think one of the things that that communities struggle with is whether they can be satisfied, for example, being a first-rate residential community, as opposed to being a residential community with an industrial park. I see this over and over again in Greater Minnesota, and that's just as the theory, what the right thing to do, is just as unsettled in Greater Minnesota as it is in the Twin Cities.
Hmm. Representative Poppy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is an interesting conversation, but I do live in Greater Minnesota, so I have some questions related to that. And first of all, you talked about you try to keep businesses to stay in Minnesota as they're looking to expand or move around. I'm just wondering, how often is it that a metropolitan, either Twin Cities or suburban company, will look at Greater Minnesota and actually consider a move and make that move?
Mr. Blazer.
Madam Chair, Representative, it's when you say how often, I have as many looking at Greater Minnesota locations from the Twin Cities as I do actually have looking at the Twin Cities from Greater Minnesota. I'm going to meet tomorrow morning with the CEO of a business that's got its headquarters in the Twin Cities, facilities in Greater Minnesota, looking at an expansion plan and trying to figure out whether there's sufficient workers in the Greater Minnesota community to support the expansion or whether they need to look at a suburban location in the Twin Cities. What's one of the great things about the state of Minnesota, and one thing that we don't say often enough when we're working on the development and the growth of the state, is that we provide a variety of economic environments in which businesses can thrive. You got this major metropolitan area. You have regional centers like Rochester or Mankato or Worthington. And then you've got relatively small communities, and they each provide, you know, every company I see is different. And so it's great from my perspective that I've got this variety of locations so that, you know, one way or another, I can suggest a location that will work for that company. And I'm not sure you can do that in every other state, but we can do that in Minnesota.
Representative Poppy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. To follow up on that comment, I'm just wondering, do you ever target an area for economic growth? Certainly, as we're looking at the demographics of change here in Minnesota and southwestern Minnesota being an area that is losing in population but certainly is rich in ag land and other resources, including Southwest Minnesota State University and the opportunities throughout the area for higher education. Do you look at an area and say, okay, how do we grow employees and workers as opposed to growing businesses, perhaps, and how do we actually target an area for economic development and economic growth?
Mr. Blazer.
Madam Chair, Representative, the best thing about our Grow Minnesota program is that we've got these 56 local partners. So we have the Worthington Chamber is a partner, the Marshall Chamber is a partner, the Fairmont Chamber is a partner, and they're doing these business retention visits, and their number one purpose is A, to keep the companies that are there already, but B, to look at opportunities for growth and expansion. And our office, the state chamber, weighs in whenever we can to help them find, when they get a company that wants to grow, They frequently turn to us when they're looking for statewide resources, and we're glad to help with those efforts. But if you looked at the map of where the Grow Minnesota communities are, they're pretty well distributed around the state of Minnesota, so that now, unlike I think most states, we can say that Minnesota has a statewide business retention program built around local chambers of commerce. And it's not perfect. We have a lot of work to do to make it stronger, but this, I think, will become a great way for keeping the jobs that we have and adding more, not just in southwestern Minnesota, but statewide.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a couple more questions, but I will allow others to ask them, and then I'll...
Thank you, Representative Poppe. Representative Marquardt.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair, and this is for Mr. Klingel. We've talked about business climate and talked about business vacancy and talking about the tens of thousands that come into Minneapolis to work every day and so forth. There's a proposal floating around that would ultimately eliminate $85 million of local government aid from the city of Minneapolis. Got to get a little tax question in here. Would that, you know, which is going to result in increased property taxes and or service cuts, would that change your testimony at all as far as looking at the future business and economic viability of the city of Minneapolis?
Well, Ms. Representative Marquardt, we are in the redistricting committee, and we will have an opportunity to discuss those issues at greater length. Can you maybe help us out in I'm trying to figure out where the redistricting portion of it is and what you're trying to ask here.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I will. What I heard in the testimony is how, you know, Minneapolis and St. Paul, you think, is kind of all one. And the reasons you mentioned was some of the business climate and all of the workers that come in to Minneapolis. But my question is, looking ahead to the future, if certain proposals were to become law, and you had significant property tax increases and or service cuts in the city of Minneapolis, I think business, well, I'll let Mr. Klingel respond, may or may not be hurt from that. And would that change the amount of folks coming into the city of Minneapolis to work, because there may or may not be businesses there, or there may be increase in vacancies as far as businesses? I'm just wondering if that would change the testimony that Mr. Klingel is giving here today. And I think it is related to redistricting.
Sure. And Mr. Klingel, you would have to assume that the cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul would be increasing their property taxes as part of the city council. But if you could respond to that question, that would be helpful.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative, the core cities are attractive currently, and they do draw very well. If, and I'm being general here, but if we do things that injure their opportunity to serve and hold those businesses, or for reasons of maybe it's congestion or crime or who knows what might happen in those cities, they're not as attractive, then certainly the people that are choosing to move downtown or to expand downtown would choose to go somewhere else. Currently, downtown Minneapolis and downtown St. Paul are attractive places to work, and we are shuffling the pieces on the chessboard quite a bit. There's a company coming in from Bloomington, which we also serve, that's moving into downtown Minneapolis. But then we have businesses moving out of the cities into the suburban ring, and we're happy to have them all if we keep them in the metro, but the core cities are critical to having a healthy metro. Is that a reasonable response?
Yes, and thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Marquardt. Mr. Klingel, and to that point, how does that play as far as, and this is maybe a better question for Mr. Blazar, when communities have local option sales taxes to, say, for example, like Rochester or Duluth, or I think is Barnesville that has one?
Well, the closest one to me. There's none, I don't think, by me.
Okay.
Yeah.
Madam Chair, typically the local option sales tax, I'm going to give you two answers. I would say typically there's a de minimis, so that, you know, I think when you've passed local option sales tax, you've been sensitive, for example, to the concerns of an auto dealer. If I'm an auto dealer in Rochester and you put an extra half a point on the sales tax, any buying a car, that, if you didn't have the, it's not a de minimis, it's a maximum tax, I think it's $20. If you didn't have that, then the auto dealers would quickly figure out a way to get outside of Rochester, because you'd make a major purchase that much more expensive. So I think that's one thing that the when you have granted authority for local option sales taxes, I think you've included that kind of provision. But second answer is one of the things that we have discovered is that in this economy, businesses are buying equipment with greater frequency. So whether you're a manufacturer or a data processing, some sort of information services company, the equipment in that business is turning over with greater and greater frequency. Now, if you're using that equipment in a manufacturing process, you can apply for a refund. But that's only part of the economy. Anybody who's processing data or running some kind of information services business is turning over that equipment probably more frequently than the manufacturer. And what we levy a sales tax on those equipment purchases. The local sales tax just makes that a higher premium. So and maybe the local sales tax becomes the straw that, you know, that breaks the camel's back, that says there are other places we can go and not have that premium on our equipment purchases. I think that's an important question that we need to be asking ourselves, because in recent months, we've dealt with a number of projects related to data centers. You know, do they want to build them in Minnesota, or do they want to build them in places like North Carolina's attractive location? Arizona, New Mexico has attracted some. And that impact of that tax is can be quite substantial, but frankly, the basic sales tax is probably the bigger deal than that add-on.
Great. Representative Murphy, you had some questions, and I know Representative Poppy had some more questions.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Blazer, you talked about great residential communities. And then you said something about, but then they get an industrial park. Do you remember that?
Mr. Blazer?
Are you suggesting that there should be some residential communities and then some others with industrial parks, that the great one doesn't need an industrial park?
Madam Chair, Representative Murphy, no, I'm just suggesting that a community, and I use the word community deliberately, needs to sort of think about what it wants to be in the how it wants to develop over a period of time. And some communities could reach the conclusion that we really want to be a first-rate residential community. Others may reach the conclusion that we do have that we can make a strong offering as a location for a manufacturing facility. And then some communities may feel they can be both. All I'm suggesting is that in this economy, it's really important for communities to think strategically about how they want to develop and how they want to evolve, and that every community can't and won't be able to do everything. I visited, remember doing a visit, this was a couple years ago, to Fisher, Minnesota, which is up near Representative, is that Fisher in your district, Representative Fabian? Not to ask you. So it's in northwestern Minnesota, and the reason I heard about it was I was meeting with folks in Crookston, and they were beside themselves that so many kids from Crookston or families from Crookston were either looking at the schools in Fisher or actually moving to Fisher. And I said, well, what's that about? And these folks went on to tell me that Fisher had made a concerted effort to make it a great place where people want to live. And, you know, that's kind of a strategic decision. Not every community will decide to go that direction. Others will say, you know, boy, we've got a wonderful rail. We've got great access to rail. We've got great access to highways. We really are a great location for manufacturing. It's an important discussion to have, and the result will be different from community to community.
Madam Chair, Mr. Blazer, I represent at least three great residential communities. Mm-hmm. But it seems to me that over time they've gotten to a certain point where they're not considered to be progressive unless they get that industrial park and unless they grow their businesses. And I'm not sure that the great old-timer residents think that's such a hot idea, but the newcomers just are panting for the new growth. But I think you said it right when you said there has to be a strategic long-range plan. You didn't say long-range, I'm saying long-range. You said strategic planning and where they fit with the other communities in the region. I think that's the key. But these great residential communities are what we in the redistricting process have to preserve, I think.
Representative Poppy?
Thank you, Madam Chair. In talking about growing Minnesota, and I actually don't represent southwestern Minnesota. I'm in Austin and southern Minnesota. But one of the things that I think we struggle with perhaps in greater Minnesota might be we have workers. Maybe we don't have housing sometimes. We have older housing stock. We may have not access to broadband in some of the more rural areas. And I'm just wondering about, as you look at Grow Minnesota, and you've got the concept that you're trying to hopefully retain businesses, but maybe grow and recruit new businesses and encourage entrepreneurs, will there be phase two and phase three and looking at perhaps the regional strength, as you've been talking about, of an area, how you grow the workers in that area, how you help with their higher education needs, how you might meet the housing concerns that an area might have if you did bring in a new or expanded business, and then the technology needs, the broadband. So it's kind of an over-encompassing kind of question, I think, but I'm just, because I do represent an area in greater Minnesota which happens to be doing fairly well, certainly in the scope of things, I'm just curious about how we can help other areas of the state to be, to thrive and sustain themselves so that it isn't such a draw on the rest of us in the state.
Mr. Blazar, and if you can tie that into how that relates to just the redistricting process overall.
Sure. Madam Chair, Representative Hoppe, when we do the Grow Minnesota visit, I mentioned that we always say we thank the company for being here. We learn a lot about what they do. We ask them if there's anything specifically we could do to help them, that company, be successful. The fourth thing that we do is we ask them about the overall environment in which they're working in. And so, and at the end of the year, we roll up those results and then talk to, in the case of a local chamber, our regional policymakers. In the case of the statewide issues, we try to bring those results to the attention of the legislature and the governor. And those suggestions are at least are what we hear from businesses about what we need to do to help our state's economy develop, meaning change, really. So, for example, one of the results that we have been, statewide results that we've been talking to groups about, is the need to expand our ability of Minnesota businesses to have customers outside the U.S. Turns out the world economy is recovering quicker than the U.S. economy. And helping a company figure out how to find a customer outside the U.S., we think is a great strategy for building the economy. So to answer your question, we do look for, sometimes it's telecom, a few years ago it was housing, mm-hmm. but we look for those infrastructure changes that we could make to help the economy develop. To go to your question, Madam Chair, with how this comes back to reapportionment, I think that that it's really unsettled. This economy is such, it gives businesses the opportunity to go wherever they want, and it gives people, workers, more opportunity to live in different places. And we see, I see it all the time when I ask the person on the other side of the table, so tell me about your workers and where they live and how you got them and what it's like, what you have to do to retain them. I wish I could tell you that there was a clear pattern, but I think it's a very unsettled time with respect to how the settlement patterns in Minnesota will look 10 years from now. Based on just talking to Minnesota businesses. If you had the state demographer up here, he might be able to tell you the patterns that he sees. But when I talk to companies, I don't see a clear pattern. I can't tell you that a whole bunch of them are going to pick rural locations, or a whole bunch of them are going to pick central city locations, or that the suburbs are going to be the big deal. It varies so much from business to business. They each have a different equation for being successful, and part of that equation is where they locate.
Well, and Mr. Klingel.
Thank you. All I wanted to add to that was that is the case that we don't know where the businesses are going to be, and so we certainly don't know where the workers are going to come from that serve those businesses because of that. And that's true in the metropolitan area as well. Thank you. I'm sure.
I think what concerns me is looking that 10 years out, you know, we have the potential of losing a congressional member. So that is a big concern for all of us. It's not just that whether choosing greater Minnesota or the metro, it's whether they're choosing Minnesota as a whole. So thank you both for being here today. And I think we're going to call Deb McMillan from the Southwest Metro Regional Chamber of Commerce, if you can come forward, and Judy Johnson from the Twin West Chamber of Commerce. And if you could just please state your name for the record, and welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Deb McMillan. I'm the president of the Southwest Metro Chamber of Commerce. The Southwest Metro Chamber of Commerce serves businesses in eastern Carver County, specifically in the cities of Chaska, Chanhassen, Carver, and Victoria. We have about 450 members, and we do serve businesses in communities other than the ones that we geographically represent. Just to give you a little background about Carver County and our region, we are actually growing. We've grown about 30% in the last 10 years, and Met Council has us on track to do that again in the next 10 years. We actually are geographically where the suburbs meets the country, and so there's plenty of farm country still in western Carver County. So we are one of those kind of emerging communities and are experiencing that. To your knowledge, we have completed Highway 212 through our communities, which has been a beautiful addition from an economic growth perspective for our community. So we have seen much growth, actually, even in industry still. We have several recession-resistant type businesses. We have strong roots in biobusiness. We have several biobusiness type businesses in our area, and we also have strong roots in the medical community. Ridgeview Medical is very prominent in our community and does a great job with continuing to meet the needs of the medical community. So those two industries specifically have experienced some growth in our area and have chosen to expand and locate in our area. We do also, in spite of some of the recession going on, we are still building some things out there. Mills Fleet Farm will break ground in Carver later on this summer. And there's going to be some other medical expansions in Waconia, with Auburn West building a new building and an expansion in a memory care facility out in Waconia as well. So those are the kinds of expansions that are starting to drive the population growth in our region. The completion of 212 also opened up a great opportunity for land that's already guided for commercial and retail development as well. We also have some kind of speculative projects kind of on the back burner, kind of waiting to see what's going to happen with the economy, taking a look at, you know, are there some needs that can be met. So I think that there's some discussion to be talked about around clustering businesses of specific in specific areas. you heard Mr. Blazer and Mr. Klingel talk specifically about the Grow Minnesota program. We are a Grow Minnesota chamber, and we do visit with our members every year and learn from them kind of what do they see on the horizon. And a couple years ago, almost without exception, folks were talking about expanding. We're going to expand. We're going to hire more people. We're going to increase our market. That discussion has dramatically decreased over the last couple of years, but we still do see some optimism in the market and the exploring of new markets. And as Bill mentioned, lots of our businesses are starting to talk about exploring the international market. Is there a market for their business internationally, and what does that look like, and how does that increase the number of jobs that are provided in our area? So that's one of the conversations that they're having. And there's also a renewed interest in some additional R&D opportunities and new products and expansion of products or complementing products. Where are some new markets at? So there are some really encouraging things being done in the R&D. The struggle being what is the cost of getting that new product to the market? And that's part of where the discussion comes in. We are one of the areas that really tries to market itself as a region as opposed to specific cities. I think when you start kind of wrapping yourself around municipal boundaries, you really take a lot of great opportunity out of the conversation. So we really do think it's important to market ourselves as a region and look to do that pretty aggressively in the future as well. I think that's about all the remarks I have. I'm happy to answer any questions that you have about the region or our businesses in the area specifically.
Representative Murphy.
Thank you. I didn't understand your comment that you have 10% growth now and Met Council has us on track for another 10% growth.
Ms. McMillan.
It's about 30% growth that we're expecting. Met Council has population projections that they... for their purposes, they say, we expect you to grow this much so that they can provide enough sewer, water capacity, that sort of thing, to accommodate the growth. And that has us growing at almost 30% in the next 10 years, the Met Council projections do.
And Ms. McMillan, Met Council provides the sewer and water?
Correct.
Ms. McMillan.
Oh.
Representative Murphy.
In your region or in the area that you were speaking of, how much land is available for residential growth?
Ms. McMillan.
You know, I don't know the numbers specifically, but we do have, there are developments still building housing, both single family and multifamily housing. So there is some of that still under construction and underway and being built. And our numbers are actually quite good. I don't have the exact numbers. I can certainly get those for you, but I don't have those with me.
Representative Murphy.
Madam Chair, I think it would be good if we knew if there's going to be 30% growth. Is there housing available for that? Mm-hmm. I mean, is there tracts of land available for housing for that much growth? Or are we talking business growth?
Okay. Ms. McMillan is going to provide us with that information.
I can certainly take a look and see what the available housing is. We do have land. There is land guided in the comprehensive plans towards housing, towards industrial commercial growth. So we can certainly take a look at what those numbers are in terms of how many acres are guided towards housing, how many acres towards commercial industrial growth.
Thank you. Representative Clark.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Can you tell us how the foreclosure crisis has affected your community there in terms of numbers, trends, where that's at right now? And was that part of the Met Council's projections, or did they make those projections before that?
Ms. McMillan?
These projections were probably made prior to that. I'm sure they've made some adjustments in them recently. I don't have specific data about that. Most of what I have is anecdotal. We certainly do have some foreclosure issues. I don't think we are a little bit more isolated than maybe some of the other communities are. So I don't have those exact numbers.
Representative Clark.
Good. Is that something that you can get us then?
Yeah, let me take a look and see if
Thank
I can
you.
Find that for you.
Thank you.
And Ms. Johnson, if you could state your name for the record, and welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Judy Johnson, and I serve as the Director of Government Affairs for the Twin West Chamber of Commerce. And prior to that, I managed the Grow Minnesota for the Twin West Chamber of Commerce for 3 years. The Twin West Chamber of Commerce represents approximately 900 members from a variety of businesses and industries, ranging from nationally and internationally renowned corporations and industrial-driven manufacturers to home-based businesses and companies involved in service and professional sectors. Our chamber covers 10 suburban cities in the West Metro region of the Twin Cities. And just as some background about our West Suburban region as it relates to population and jobs, and again, I'm citing numbers that were made available from the Met Council, jobs for 2009 as they're put out for our use, and then also population was from 2010. We have 10 communities, as I mentioned. Plymouth has over 70,000 residents, and we provide over 46,000 jobs. Minnetonka has over 49,000 residents, providing over 46,000 jobs. St. Louis Park has over 45,000 residents, providing over 39,000 jobs. Golden Valley has over 20,000 residents, providing over 33,000 jobs. Brooklyn Park has over 75,000 residents, providing over 24,000 jobs. Brooklyn Center has over 30,000 residents, providing over 11,000 jobs. New Hope has over 20,000 residents, providing over 11,000 jobs. Hopkins has 17,000 residents, providing over 10,000 jobs. Crystal has about 22,000 residents, providing just over 4,000 jobs. And the wonderful city of Medicine Lake has 371 residents, providing 8 jobs. For our Twin West region, this represents over 350,000 in population, with over 227,000 jobs being provided in the western suburban region. So for comparison, again, based on the 2009-10 Met Council statistics, Minneapolis, for example, has over 380,000 population, 280,000 jobs. St. Paul, 285,000 population, with over 176,000 jobs. So as a comparison, we do agree that we are part of a great region, but that'll give you a little bit of a snapshot in comparison of the Twin West region. In our many years of Grow Minnesota visits and conversations with business owners and business leaders, we know that economic and job centers within our region are driven by many factors. They include proximity to the urban core, multimodal transportation systems, proximity to rail lines and air transportation, and a skilled workforce aligned with the needs of job providers within our region. The Twin West region does play a strong role in Minnesota's economic engine. I'm going to go off on another factor that I think that's very important for our region. I would agree with everything that's been said prior to you by the other chamber representatives, but transportation corridors also play a large role in the linking of job centers within our region. On the northern edge of our region, we have I-694 and Highway 610, which connect job centers from Brooklyn Park to Maple Grove and beyond. I-494 from Eden Prairie through Minnetonka and Plymouth to Maple Grove connect major commercial office and industrial and also retail centers. I-394 drives job centers from Minneapolis through St. Louis Park, Golden Valley, and Minnetonka. We also have Highways 100 and Highway 169, which also drives economic development and redevelopment within the communities of Minneapolis, St. Paul, Golden Valley, Brooklyn Center, Brooklyn Park, New Hope, Hopkins, and Plymouth. Future plans for Southwest Light Rail transit from Minneapolis through St. Louis Park, Hopkins, Minnetonka to Eden Prairie also focus on economic centers and future job creation. The proposed Southwest LRT line will serve over 240,000 jobs and will connect the region's top job center, downtown Minneapolis, with the region's sixth largest job center, the Opus Golden Triangle in Minnetonka. And it is apparent that job centers align solidly along these major transportation corridors. Also, while several of Twin West inner ring suburbs and fully developed cities have seen some stagnation or a slight drop in population, economic development and job creation opportunities have become heightened along these major transportation corridors. In addition, third-tier suburbs such as Plymouth and Brooklyn Park are seeing population growth and are poised for continued economic activity as our economy recovers. And just to add to what other speakers have been testifying to as well, when we're out talking to job creators, we're hearing some of the same things that you've heard previously stated. In addition to that, the proximity of the workforce is very important. Quality of life is very important. Taxation is very important. In addition to the other things I mentioned, our communities, again, we're seeing closely aligned to these transportation corridors, there are great opportunities for redevelopment, again, in those closer suburbs to the Minneapolis area. But those are also very important to the growth centers within our region, such as the Plymouths and the Brooklyn Parks and the Minnetonkas, as we're seeing pressure for expected increased growth within those communities, as projected by the Met Council, to make sure that those transportation systems are staying current. So we still have potential job growth taking place. I personally am seeing an uptick in commercial office interest. You had mentioned earlier a question regarding foreclosures as far as commercial office or lease space. Traditionally, that's not something that gets reported to the chamber, certainly, and I happen to also have been involved in city government for many years. The cities really have a hard time tracking that as well. Specifically in the housing industry, a lot of them are alerted when problems arise and inspectors have to come out. The county may be aware of some of that, and certainly, as Mr. Blazer mentioned, the folks who represent the commercial industrial properties as far as leasing and selling would have a lot of current information. I know, too, that cities are going through the Board of Equalizations. That's where the valuations are being determined and set at the local level. That flows up to the county. There may be some information that's coming yet just this spring when it relates to commercial, industrial, and office properties in this tough economy as it relates to the valuations and maybe potential challenges. As I mentioned earlier, too, as far as redevelopment and some economic growth that we're seeing within the Twin West region, certainly in the community of St. Louis Park, there's a lot of opportunities that are presenting themselves and flourishing right now in the West End. In Brooklyn Center, for example, Walmart has just announced and is moving through the process to be a new anchor in Brookdale, and the FBI has recently announced that they'll have some new headquarters, bringing in about 200 workers into that area. We're also seeing, of course, Opus in the Minnetonka area, which is, again, working through the interchange improvements in that corridor, and also planning for if Southwest Light Rail should come to fruition. And then in the city of Plymouth, for example, we're still seeing a great uptick in housing starts, new creation of housing. And a lot of that, again, is based on available land, as there was a question earlier, and the use of the sewer line that is worked through with the Met Council. But also a lot of that comes back to the strength of this economy, this region as a whole. You know, Minneapolis, Twin Cities region has been ranked high. West suburban communities have been fortunate enough to receive some top honors as it relates to economic growth and, you know, great places to live. And a lot of that comes back down to the safety of the community, transportation infrastructure, schools, and the overall health of the community. So our chamber, again, works on a regional basis where we're trying to retain and grow jobs within our region. We do work in partnership with the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce to do so, and we're optimistic about the future as it relates to population and job growth as this economy tries to recover. Thank you very much for allowing me to testify today. Should you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Thank you. Members, any questions? Representative Clark.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I think I heard you talk about foreclosures in terms of commercial property, but did I hear you say you weren't sure about the residential, or maybe I missed it?
Madam Chair.
Ms. Johnson.
And Representative. Yes, when it comes to reports of foreclosures, whether they be housing or commercial industrial, the chambers don't get any direct reports on that information, and quite frankly, it's very difficult for cities to have any kind of direct information as those are occurring. We may get notice from the county, for example, if there's a tax forfeit case taking place, absent owner, taxes not being paid. But really, it's very tough locally to get a handle on what's current. We work very closely with our commercial industrial office representatives that are members of our chamber and kind of get anecdotally what's going on in the marketplace right now. The commercial office market is really pretty flat right now. It's just not moving as much as we'd like. As Mr. Blazer mentioned, we're seeing some good uptick depending on what sectors manufacturing are serving. And for some reason, retail seems to be hanging in there in the West Suburban region. But based on foreclosures, it's really quite tough to get our hands around where those numbers are at currently. A lot of it's anecdotal, and maybe some of that information flows to the county.
Representative Clark.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think if you wanted to get it, you probably could, and maybe I could be of some help to you to do that. And it's partly a concern to this committee because we learned early on that some of the foreclosures, and I guess from the Housing Committee too, that the wave of foreclosures has really hit the suburbs much more now than the inner cities, which we had quite a bit of impact there, you know, in recent years, but now it's really hit out in your area and even further out. And so I'm just thinking it would be helpful, to us to know. I mean, you must drive around and notice a lot of signs for sales and so on, or don't you?
Madam Chair, Ms. Johnson, go ahead.
And Representative, that's a great question. I think if I can just put my other hat on from sure. with my City of Plymouth hat, I'm back on the City Council there. One of the things that we know, especially in the West Suburban region, that individual cities have been hit harder than others. We know that Brooklyn Park, for example, was one of those that was hit quite hard. From what I'm hearing, there's also been somewhat of a rebound. We know that when properties in the West Suburban communities are put back on the market, we're hoping, and in some communities we're seeing a brisk resale through the short sale process. It somewhat becomes an opportunity for others to purchase in a community where maybe, for example, in Plymouth or Minnetonka, they couldn't in other years recently. Another thing that we're also noticing, we just went through our round of our State of the City addresses through the Twin West region, and we're hearing about some of this as it relates to housing foreclosures. One thing, though, that I think is interesting as it relates to us as a community from a regional perspective is when you look at property values, both commercial, industrial, and housing, while everything's been hit and everything has dropped, and we're still seeing a bit of a decline, and all of that, again, will be vetted as the Board of Equalization process moves forward this spring within our region and valuations are being determined. The West Suburban region has been able to survive and somewhat hang in there a little bit better than other communities in Hennepin County, our counterparts, which is interesting when it comes down to taxation then, because even though there's been a decline in values, even though our communities have been hit as well, some have been hanging on a little bit better to values, even though they're dropping, and the unintended consequence or a consequence of that is that there's a bit of a property tax shift then, that even though valuations are dropping, the property taxes are being shifted a bit to our communities just because of how the property tax pie is meted out. So all that's being vetted out right now as our communities are going through their Board of Equalization, and then that will determine, again, the taxation that will be set at the end of the year for 2012.
Thank you, Ms. Johnson. Thanks, Ms. McMillan and Representative Clark. As you know, we are bound by the 2010 census numbers that we have, not any other projections that we have as far as the redistricting process goes. But members, if nobody else has any other questions, we are Representative Hortman.
Thank you, thank you, Madam Chair. I have a question for you, I guess. As a member of the committee, I'm interested if you could give kind of a roadmap of, you know, where we've been and where we're going. I know we've done some public outreach. We went to three predominantly white rural communities. I'm at this point in time uncertain as to whether you plan to do any outreach in any minority communities, whether in the suburbs or in the central cities. I'm interested in what principles you plan to use as we look at drawing the map, and what role we as a minority have in drawing that map. Will we just come one day and there will be a map, or are there some principles we'll agree on ahead of time? Is that something that will be a collaborative process? What is our role in providing input? What is your plan to solicit public input before the plan is drafted or a draft map comes out? What is your plan after a map is drafted? Will the public have a meaningful opportunity to weigh in? You know, we're getting in the closing days of this session. By the time we come back from spring break, it's really going to fly by. And we may be starting the whole budgeting process over at that point, and I know we will all be very busy. And so, I know that you've been the chair of the committee for 4 months, and that's not a ton of time, but we don't have a lot of time to put together a plan that Minnesota can feel good about and believe in. And I think a big part of how we put together a plan that Minnesota can feel good about and believe in is we do it openly and publicly. And, you know, perhaps it's my background as a anti-discrimination lawyer. Perhaps it's because I represent a very robust, diverse community. And my district may be one of those minority opportunity districts. But I'm concerned that we're not necessarily laying a foundation to defend what we've done under the Voting Rights Act, Section 2. And so I'm just curious if you can give us kind of an overview of your plan going forward.
Well, thank you, Representative Hortman, and just a couple of things for you. As you know, that we have had three tours to Greater Minnesota. We visited Marshall, we visited Hermantown, we also visited Rochester. Each of those communities have minority populations. If you weren't aware of that, you might want to look at the demographic information that's available from the state demographer's website as well as the GIS office's website. On top of that, we have had hearings, you know, starting at the very beginning of session. Much like any other legislative committee, we've had hearings throughout that time period. And throughout that time, we have sought the input of the public. And it has been fabulous, the information that we've been able to gather from people, and the participation in this process I think has been great. During that time, you specifically focused on the minority population. We had the different representatives from different minority populations within the state of Minnesota come to us and testify. I thought you were at that committee hearing. Perhaps you missed it, but all of them came forward, and we have asked them to provide any input that they have going forward, and as well as other different interest groups that have come forward from the League of Women Voters, the Council of Nonprofits, and we have asked them to continue to participate in this process. We have posted all of that information on the web. We have solicited the input from the different American Indian tribes that we have within the state of Minnesota. They have had their letters posted to the committee's website as well. So we are just going through this process, and it's still fluid. We are gathering more input from the public as we go forward, and I think you know, the great thing and the luxury that we have as a committee is that we've been able to have more public input in this process than any other committee that you have here in the legislature, and I'm proud of that fact. So as far as you as a member of the minority, you're more than welcome to offer any input anytime. You have done that already on a couple of occasions, as has Representative Murphy and Representative Poppy and Representative Clark. Representative Marquardt has been a little on the quiet side, but I imagine that he will give his fair share here now and then. But that's okay, Representative Marquardt. But so my door is always open, and you're more than welcome to talk to me about those issues that you may have. Representative Hortman.
But just to follow up, I would love to meet with you in your office privately, but I don't think that's really what the process should look like. I think the conversations we have about redistricting we should have on the record and in the public. And what I'm particularly interested in is whether the sum total of our minority outreach has already occurred through the means that we used, and what is the process for putting together a draft map, and are there principles that we will try to agree on as a committee that we can all agree that they're the principles. We might not agree where the lines fall pursuant to those principles, but will we be having a conversation about what principles we should use in drafting the map?
Well, Representative Hortman, you've certainly provided a lot of input during committee, and you know that's great, and that's part of the process as well. I'm not to imply that you have to do it in private. You can if you want to, but you can also do it right here in the committee. In fact, I think you are doing it right now. So as far as the rest of the committee schedule, as I mentioned, it's going to be fluid, and we will be no different than any other bill that we have at the legislature when we get to that point where we're talking about map concepts and we're talking about criteria. You will have that chance to provide your input at that point. So. Thank you,
Madam Chair. What I would just
Representative Hortman.
Thank you. Is that that our next meeting be dedicated to the discussion of whether the committee will adopt principles prior to looking at any draft maps? Because I really think we should talk through all the different variables that we could consider. Some people consider certain things to be part of the redistricting process, and some people don't. For example, political competitiveness. We haven't really established whether that's a value we're going to try to put into the maps or not. And I would also request that we do some minority outreach in the communities where those populations live. I think I very much respect the work of the Council on Black Minnesotans, but I think that going to the Urban League in Minneapolis, or coming out to Brooklyn Park or Brooklyn Center, or going to the Hispanic community in St. Paul would be a better venue for people to provide input. And I think since the Voting Rights Act is really the, you know, touchstone of our legal boundaries, that we should really do more in terms of minority outreach in the communities where they live.
Well, thank you, Representative Hortman. I appreciate your input on that, those different areas. And certainly you're more than welcome to offer legislation to bring up that conversation on some of those issues, as is any member of this committee to offer legislation. So I encourage you to do that if that's something that you're interested in doing. As far as going out to other different communities, we could tour the entire state of Minnesota if time were to allow us to do that. Unfortunately, we can't do that, and we have had the opportunity to have some wonderful input from different folks from all walks of life, and that is part of the reason why we've had committee hearings in the late afternoon versus having them in a morning session like this, to allow for the public to participate in this process. And I think that's key, and we will continue to do that as we move forward. Members, any other questions? Representative Clark.
Well, maybe just one comment, building a little bit on what Representative Hortman was talking about. Excuse me. I know we did have an absence of some participation from the American Indian community here when there was participation, and I did hear you say that information or requests for information and I think some response was made with all the tribal communities. Maybe one thing you don't know is that there are more urban American Indians in Minnesota, people living in the urban area, than there are in the tribal communities. And so those folks, many of whom I represent, and there's some other legislators who do too, they're kind of left out. So if there should be a hearing that you would decide to have in the urban area, I, in addition to maybe the Urban League, I guess I'd really like to suggest maybe the Minneapolis American Indian Center. Again, it's the site in the kind of the, people call it Indian country. It's home to a lot of urban American Indian people. Both Minneapolis and St. Paul people participate a lot in that particular resource. And so I just want to put that out there, should there be a decision to do any more hearings.
Sure, and thank you, Representative Clark. And as we discussed after that last committee hearing that we had extended invitation to the American Indian Council to come and testify before us. Their comment back to us is that they would prefer to do it on a one-on-one basis, and that's what we've been doing going forward. So, members, any other thoughts or questions? Great. We are adjourned.